This week, the army gets the Olympic call.
Miliband calls for Home Secretary's resignation.
And I get no calls at all because I'm on O2.
Struggling to be heard, Mitch Benn, Susan Kalman, Gareth Gwynne and Laura Shavin.
I'm Hugh Dennis.
I'm Steve Punt and this is...
The Noel Show!
And the future of the House of Lords caused controversy this week. In this day and age, do we want our laws made by a load of out-of-touch, overprivileged amateurs? Because if not, then the House of Lords have to rein them in a bit.
House of Lords reform is one of the pet policies of the Lib Dems. Nick Clegg is like a work colleague who, with everyone facing salary cuts, bankruptcy and unemployment, insists on calling a meeting to address the issue of unwashed-up mugs. And it is controversial. Senior lawyer Lord Panic predicts more disputes if the bill passes into law, although having a Lord Panic on the bench doesn't necessarily fill you with confidence.
Prisoner at the bar, how do you plead?
Not guilty, my lad.
Really? What? Oh, no, what are we going to do? What are we going to do?
Anyway, poor old Nick Clegg, the Andy Murray of politics, keeps getting through to the final stages... looking like he might win and then suffering crushing defeat at the hands of a ruthless rival.
Well, obviously I'm gutted for Nick that he lost the bill, but, you know, at some point he's going to win a vote in a major parliament. It's going to happen. But probably not till I've retired.
It wasn't just the House of Lords, though. The elderly generally were under the cosh this week with plans to restrict benefits for richer pensioners.
Tory MP Nick Bowles wants to stop all non-means-tested benefits for older people. He'll start by stopping Michael Parkinson giving away any more free pens with life insurance. But it doesn't seem fair because, according to several surveys, these days many grandparents continue to work and boost the economy.
Yes, this is certainly true in parts of Croydon, where the average age of a grandparent is 32.
Many lords, of course, already have gainful alternative employment anyway. The Duke of Kent, for example, he gives away the prizes at Wimbledon and... actually, I think that's all he does. I've certainly never seen him anywhere else. I always think it must be rather disappointing for the Wimbledon winners that he does the prize giving. Almost anyone else in the crowd would do. David Beckham, Simon Fuller, Kate Middleton. But no, in the midst of all that stellar fame, the All England club always go for the Duke of Kent.
All the rest of the royals, of course, are watching at home going, how on earth does he get that gig? Centre Court tickets, all I've done this week is open a limb replacement centre.
Talking about?
The Duke of Kent.
Yes, the Duke of Kent, is it? Yeah, I always thought he was a lookalike.
Anyway, one is a little worried that one of one's corgis is looking unwell. Fortunately, William and Kate gave me this splendid new phone.
This is your reminder to call the vet.
Talking of senior citizens who are still working, it's 50 years since the Rolling Stones' first gig this week, and 25 years since people started making jokes about how old the Rolling Stones are. The Stones, of course, epitomise how much our perception of age has changed. Older people don't behave the way they used to. This week, for example, a judge turned down Apple's patent case against Samsung on the grounds that...
the Samsung tablet would never be as cool as an iPad.
That's the last thing you want, is it? Surely judges aren't going to start basing their verdicts on whether or not they think things are cool.
Prisoner at the bar, you are accused of a brutal gangland murder. However, you used a sawn-off shotgun, which will never be as cool as a high-caliber Russian semi-automatic. You will go to Parkhurst for 15 years, because all the cool murderers are in Broadmoor.
Wait a minute, he's a killer, he might have a gun. Ah!
Get Lord Panic out of here.
It's politically very difficult to attack benefits for the elderly. Another proposal this week was that some pensioners should no longer get free TV licences.
This is justified on the grounds that it's only fair that they should pay, since statistically they watch more television than any other demographic. But there is a problem with that. Once they're paying for it, then the BBC will have to make sure that they get their money's worth by slanting the programming more towards them.
Welcome to Senior Mastermind. Our first contender has 2 minutes on general knowledge starting from now. Complete the following sentence. Young people today...
don't know they're born.
I'll accept that. I was looking for spend all their time on their computers. What well-known phrase should be used before making a racist comment?
I'm not a racist.
Correct. Which legal measure would, if restored, solve all the nation's problems immediately and overnight?
Bring back hanging.
Correct. What drawback would this present with certain groups of young offenders?
Too good for them.
Correct. Who is Britain's sexiest man?
Alan Titchmarsh.
Is correct. What was the title of Edwina Curry's memoir of John Major and his dress sense?
50 Shades of Grey.
No, you've got confused there, although I can see why. When did your children buy you a mobile phone?
Christmas 2003.
Correct. When did you first switch it on?
Last August.
Correct. And what happened?
It reminded me to call the vet.
Correct. At the end of that round, you have 10 points and can go away muttering that I'm not as good as that Magnus Magnusson. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Mitch Benn.
You can see from space, but I still wear size 28 pants. And now I'm gonna go back out on the road, partying hard with our friends, making movies with the Martin Scorsese, with a pound of Vaseline on the lens. We've done 50 years in a rock and roll. 50 years have a taken their toll. Keep up the pace. It's hard to be hip with your hips replaced. Now, how do we keep it going? How do we beat time's curse? For me, it's cleaner living and I exercise. For Keith, it's the complete reverse. Now, how long can we keep this up? Is this for really a young man's game? We'll be wheeling Keith out in his coffin, and I'll be on a gold-plated silver frame. We've done 50 years in a rock and roll. 50 years well it reached the goal. 50 years and we feel fine. And the strangest thing is I'm still only 29. Yeah, it's weird. How does that work exactly?
And now, fresh from the comedy crucible that is Woman's Hour, please welcome Susan Kalman.
For what seems like hundreds of years, human beings have agonised over the mystery of Stonehenge. What was it for? What was the point to it? Was there any point in the first place? Did anyone ever think it would achieve anything? Was it just a waste of money? What? No, wait, sorry, that's the Leveson Inquiry. Sorry. You remember, eh? Leveson, the Inquiry into Culture, Practice and Ethics of the Press. It's often live on the BBC, like a less interesting spring watch. But what's my point? Well, this week, Westminster broke for its summer holiday, which is, incidentally, a concept I really enjoy, Parliament's summer holiday. I like to think that they all go away together. Yeah. The Labour Party, being desperate to show they're still the party of the people, off on a budget coach trip to a holiday camp. Harriet Harman in charge of sandwiches and Pack-a-Max. David Miliband hoping against hope that this year he'll become a yellow coat, like his brother Red. Meanwhile, the Tories cruise their way to the Med in giant ships made out of hospitals. David Cameron wearing a captain's uniform he got made whilst he was a member of the Bullingdon Club. Boris Johnston, having heard his own advice to leave London during the Olympics, standing at the front of the ship, holding Jeremy Hunt in a firm embrace. Like in a scene from Titanic. Only Nick and the Lib Dems are left at home to mind the shop. All they have for the long, damp summer months is a £5 Wetherspoons voucher. George Osborne was given at an Esso garage when he tried to fill up his pony with petrol. But I digress. This parliamentary session, like many others, has been punctuated by endless unanswered questions. Whose fault is it? Who knew about it? Who texted who? Who shot JR? But still we watched. Still we hoped. Still we dreamed that we would find the answers that we sought. But then I watched the Treasury Select Committee hearing appearance of Bob Diamond. Why people can't simply be asked a direct question and give a direct answer is one I find confusing. I'm not permitted to conduct myself inappropriately without repercussions. I wish I could. I'd walk into a bank tomorrow in a top hat and monocle and shout, I'm a millionaire and I'd like to buy France. Give me a mortgage now. Fraud or ambitious marketing? I find the police react with suspicion when I'm vague with my answers. Not that it happens a lot. Not now I've photoshopped a picture of myself with myself and put it on Facebook, thus creating absolute proof that my evil twin exists. Her name's Heather, incidentally. If you see her, don't approach her. Simply leave a trail of Jaffa cakes leading to your nearest police station. But instead of the modern way of dealing with dissatisfaction, which is by tweeting, then retweeting my own passive-aggressive comments, I've decided to be proactive and suggest some things I think would make these endless inquiries better, or if not better, certainly less bad. Firstly, we need to narrow down the issues, simplify the questions, use more direct language. For a start, they should ask the four questions I always ask myself on a Saturday morning. Who, what, where, and why? Similarly, when someone responds, I don't recall, don't take that as an acceptable answer. I don't recall is an acceptable response if you've just been on a club 1830 holiday to Magaluf and you've returned with a tattoo of Eric Pickles on your torso. Less acceptable if you're answering questions about your work. To follow that logic through, then, perhaps it's that the wrong people are asking the questions. I've drawn up a list of people I think might ask the right questions in the right way. Number one, the people who supervise the 9 items or less queue in the supermarket. Number two, Angela Merkel. Having put up with Berlusconi for the past few years, she's perfectly placed to deal with the slippery characters. And personally, I dress her in a Wonder Woman costume for the hearings, like complete with a lasso of truth. It may be a step too far. Not for me. Me. I've watched a lot of films and so believe I'm eminently qualified to ask questions. I'd use the element of surprise, you know, make sure that the truth came out. So, for example, I'd arrive in the morning, like, with a basket of kittens. And after lulling the witness into a false sense of security, I'd, like, hit them with an allegation of phone hacking. So it'd be like, oh, look at the little kittens. That's Crumble and Bumble and Mumble and Oscar. Why, they're cute, aren't they? Yeah, look at their little paws. Do you want to hold one? Tell me everything you know about Fortnite! Or perhaps move all inquiries to Cabot Cove, the home of Jessica Fletcher. I've never seen an episode of Murder, She Wrote, where anyone gets away with anything. Of course, all of these suggestions are fantastical. The role of an inquiry is simply to try and gather information by asking questions, and it's doing that. Probably enough information to warrant a further inquiry about whether the information gathered was correct or full enough, probably requiring a further inquiry about whether or not the first inquiry did its job, then a further inquiry to establish if those inquiring should have done so in the first place. And one day my grandchildren will look at me with wide eyes and say, Granny, was anyone ever actually called to account as a result of these inquiries? And I'll say, don't be silly, son. That's not the point of an inquiry. That's the point of the internet.
Now, schools are breaking up for the summer, and at this time of year, there are more children listening to the programme. So to digest the news for our younger audience, it's time for Junior Now Show.
It'll soon be time for the Olympics. They first happened in Greece thousands of years ago, where the athletes ran in bare feet, something the Greek competitors are going to replicate this year.
And you know how your PE teachers normally tell you to eat less McDonald's? Well, at the Olympics, that's all you can eat. What a treat! The official drink of the Olympics is Coca-Cola, the official chocolate of the Olympics is Cadbury's, the official disease of the Olympics is type 2 diabetes... And after all that, you can join in too, because we can roll you down hills to knock terrorists over.
In London, the preparations for the Games are well underway, although some residents of a tower block in Hackney are unhappy, because the Ministry of Defence are putting ground-to-air missiles on their roof. They objected that this would make them a terrorist target, but they lost the argument, probably because the Ministry of Defence had ground-to-air missiles. And they didn't.
In fact, there are going to be missiles all over that part of London, as we will soon be aware from the plot of EastEnders.
I ain't been bothering you again, Phil.
Don't worry, Jay. I've got hold of a barrage of rapier missiles, specially adapted to target Ian.
What are they like, heat-seeking?
No. They look for things that are wooden. But if he tries it on again...
Still on sport, it's been a sad time in Britain this week, because for the 76th year running, a British player hasn't won the male singles title at Wimbledon. But we have had two finalists. Andy Murray, who was British until last Sunday when he suddenly became Scottish again. And Bunny Austin in 1936. He nearly won the doubles too. In fact, many people say they would have won had there not been a terrible accident. The night before the final, Bunny Austin's partner, Peter Rabbit, was caught by Mr. McGregor and put in a pie.
Shouty morning man Chris Moyles has had to stop being on the radio because the grown-ups have decided he's too grown up now and they need someone more like you. They've picked a boy called Nick Grimshaw and he is 12 and a half. He got to be on the radio as he knows about music, is very well behaved and speaks at a pitch audible to both humans and dogs, which ruled out Fern Cotton.
It's expected that Moyles will turn up in a few months at Radio 2, which is like a party where kids that used to go to the Radio 1 party can go until they die. Well, now we're welcoming back to the Now Show a writer and presenter from Wales. And if they don't fix the M4 soon, he'll be staying here, whether he likes it or not. It's Gareth Gwynne!
Hello, hello. My name is Gareth Gwynne. Now, you might not have heard of me before, but that's okay. Until last week, you hadn't heard of new BBC Director General George Entwistle. And now, you're paying him £140 a year to provide you with thousands and thousands of top-notch, high-quality radio and television programmes and BBC One's Saturday Kitchen. Staff and Director General got off on the wrong foot as the BBC News Channel managed to spell their new boss's name wrong on an on-screen graphic within hours of him getting the job. Now, this is typical of telly people. You would not catch anyone here on BBC Radio 4 getting the name of an important media figure wrong.
What's happening in the course of the next hour? Well, first up after the news, we're going to be talking to Jeremy...
Hang on, yeah, that's... And that's as much as we're allowed to play. Now, they say there are two jobs everyone thinks they can do. Run the country and run the football team. Not at the same time, obviously. But there's a third item for the list, together with country and football team, running the BBC. And at first glance, the BBC is actually the easiest of the three. For example, with the BBC, you're not judged specifically on how well you stand up to Germans. So in the event that I get to be DG, which I clearly will one day, I've made a day-by-day plan of exactly what I'm going to do.
Monday.
Set up an automatic response on my email which just says, sorry. I'm pretty sure that's what Mark Thompson did.
Tuesday.
Right, let's get stuck into BBC Radio 4, because I reckon you can change that as much as you want and no one will give two hoots. first of all, the shipping forecast. I mean, have you heard it recently? Let's introduce some new dramatic storylines to bring in listeners. In fact, why don't we just get the production team behind The Killing to take over?
In last week's shipping forecast, police investigating a deadly outbreak of alcohol poisoning have arrested Cromarty, fourth time docker. Raids reportedly uncovered a clandestine factory where North Etzera was being used to make counterfeit alcoholic drinks. Biscay died and several others fell ill after drinking bootleg alcohol last month.
A clip there from new BBC Radio 4 series, The Shipping.
Wednesday.
BBC Radio 5 Live and phone-ins in general take experts in their field and members of the public whose only qualification to enter the debate is the ability to type 11 digits in a row and give them equal airtime and authority. This can be a great thing. There's nothing better than hearing Derek from Birkenhead laying into a floundering politician, knowing he could well be sitting on the toilet while he's doing it. But it can be tricky for us listeners, if we're dipping in and out, to know if we're listening to the opinion of someone who should or should not be trusted. So here's my solution. Everyone gets their say, but there's a blast of music behind them which reflects their authority on the subject. Now, some parts of the BBC are well ahead of me on this. Brian Cox can't speak on BBC One without being backed by a 40-piece orchestra. But I wouldn't mind if there was a piece of music behind Nick Grimshaw each time he speaks. Don't mind what it is, as long as it drowns him out.
Thursday.
BBC Six music. I'm not touching that. I'm not mental.
Friday.
Cancel Saturday Kitchen. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen Saturday Kitchen. It's on BBC One on a Saturday morning, but I tell you what, it is no swap shop. Clearly, the BBC weren't sure whether they wanted a cookery show, a chat show, some repeats, or nothing. And decided to try and do all four at once. Now, I hate everything about it. From the sting they use to jump clumsily from feature to feature, to the fact that because the show is an hour and a half long, they have to pad it out with repeats of recipes cooked by Keith Floyd. And there's another feature. They have a celebrity guest on the show every week, and the celebrity has to tell the host what their favourite and least favourite foods are, and the presenter will offer to cook either their food heaven, yum yum, or their food hell. But they leave it to the idiots, sorry, they leave it to the viewers to phone in and vote for which meal they want the celebrity to eat. Someone eating food they already know they like on TV is not a thing. That doesn't inform, educate, or entertain. You'd get the same effect by staring into a restaurant window. At least then, if you stick your bottom lip out, they might offer you a bite. Try it. It works one in four times. Anyone who votes for a celebrity to eat a food they like on TV should not be allowed to own a TV. But that's not the worst bit. What happens on this programme is the host, who's called James or Martin or both, invites a celebrity guest to his kitchen and interviews them while he cooks.
So, reading about yourself, when you first started, acting wasn't one of your true loves. You kind of fell into it.
Yeah, that's right, James or Martin or whatever your name is. I originally wanted to be, I'm trying to answer your question, but you appear to be blending.
You wouldn't believe how simple this is. All you do is blend.
Okay, well, as I was saying,
you just blend it like this. How's that?
Oh, some food to eat. Lovely. Thanks.
So how do you get from that then to your first TV job? Because you did all manner of dust-dust.
I'm still eating the food.
But you're doing something, well, two things new.
But I can't answer your question.
If there's a skill or a tip you'd like me to demonstrate on the show, then drop us a line.
Yes, the skill I'd like you to demonstrate is interviewing someone properly. Sorry, I'm a bit stuck for material here of how to get from here to the next bit of material. It's a bit of an awkward junction. I don't quite know. The weird thing about Saturday Kitchen, as much as I hate it, and I really, really hate it, there are people out there who properly love it. My friend, Chuck Sing Lee, bloody loves Saturday Kitchen. And that's right, I've said his name on air because you don't have an opinion that stupid without getting your name read on the radio. But But he properly loves it. As in, if he is out on a Saturday morning for any reason, he will iPlayer the show on Sunday and recreate the Saturday he didn't get to have. Which, let me tell you, if you live with him and you sometimes work on a Saturday, is very confusing. But you can multiply this up. These arguments are happening around every programme, on every TV channel, on every radio station. Just search for Nick Grimshaw on Twitter and you'll see what I mean. But don't search for Nick Grimshaw on iPlayer. I don't want to put any of you through that. But new Director General George Entwistle does seem to have drawn the short straw. He'll inevitably incur the wrath of pressure groups, tabloid campaigners, and cookery programme loving idiots. So good luck to him, because I wouldn't want to do it. And that's the end, but I've forgotten to write a joke to finish on this. I sort of need something to cover this.
Please welcome back Mitch Benn.
This old world was getting me down, so I checked there was nobody else around, and I climbed on up to the top of the stairs, but there was a big surprise out there. On my roof in the rain and the drizzle, on my roof where I sit and whistle, on my roof there's guided missiles now. Response to a terror threat, and there'll be one soon if there isn't yet, 'cause the place where I sit and eat my lunch is a target zone now, yeah, thanks a bunch. It's not cool and it's not groovy. If I complain, they'll only move me. I'm living in a Bruce Willis movie now.
So, yes, we found out this week, with alarmingly short time to go, that security company G4S have failed to complete the training of enough security guards in time for the Olympics. So we've asked our audience here tonight what they've started but never managed to finish.
My last O2 call.
That book by L. Ron Hubbard. Guess I won't get the chance to finish it now. Signed, Katie Holmes.
The Da Vinci Cod.
I've never finished my prison sentence. Thanks, G4S.
J'ai commencé à apprendre français. Major decided it was much too much of a hassle.
So thank you very much indeed for those, and thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye. An Hour Show starring Steve Punt and Hugh Dennis, with Mitch Benn, Susan Kalman, Gareth Gwynn and Laura Shavin. It was written by the cast, with additional material from Angela Barnes, Jack Bernhardt, Sarah Morgan, Ola and Ben Partridge. It was developed with Bill Dare, and the producer was Victoria Lloyd.